WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and now it's time for a new kind of radio, Freakonomics Radio. Freakonomics Radio is a new program produced at WNYC with American Public Media. I'm joined now by Stephen Dubner. Stephen, welcome.
Hi.
So I'm such a big fan.
Oh,
I know we're not supposed to really admit
it's okay.
That.
No, it's okay. Good. More.
All
more.
Right. So today we're going to talk about the first segment.
You must not work in public radio on a regular basis.
It's so embarrassing. I've been coming down here long enough that I shouldn't still be saying to people I'm such a big fan. All right. So I have to say I was riveted by the first segment because it had a lot to do with beer.
There you go. There you go.
But
we figured,
also,
you know.
Also the broader topic. Which was?
We called it the Church of Scientology. I think it's a word we made up. Scientology.
You did, but it's so clever, and it's really about the family business,
right? So the scion, for those who aren't familiar with the word, which I think a lot of people aren't. I think people know it's a car. It's one of those big ugly boxy cars. Can I say ugly? Can I say it's ugly?
They're
not
okay.
A sponsor.
No, no.
So,
they don't have sponsors.
The scion of a family is, the kind of the offspring of a well-regarded family. So we used to think about it as royalty. But, if the family scion is someone who comes into a family that's got a lot of wealth or power. So we wanted to look at family business. And, it's one of those things where you could easily make an argument either way. You could say, if I tell you that one third of all Fortune 500 companies are family controlled, you could say, oh, my God, that is great, because who better to look after a business after the founder's gone than a family member? Or you could say, oh, man, that's bad news, because there's no way that the heir is going to be as good as the founder. So what we wanted to know was, what do the numbers actually have to say? So we made it a kind of little exploration of that question.
Yeah. And I have to say, I'll admit it, always had this little dream. A lot of Americans have it. Start a little business, watch it grow, have it flourish, pass it on to the kids and so forth and so on. And long after you're dead, there's this big Fortune 500 company. And that's what you were looking at. And we do want to have our listeners call in if you are part of a family-owned business, if you expect to take over a family-owned business of short or long duration. Please call us. Tell us about your experience, whether it's been good or not, working with your family. 212-433-6962. That's 212-433-WMYC. And you get to talk to the Freakonomics guy, Stephen Dubner. Now, Stephen, first you looked at an example, and this one warmed my heart. Yingling. Am I saying it the right way?
You're saying it right.
Okay, yep. Yingling, because my husband tried to correct me, being the beer guy in the family, but I knew I had it right because I'd heard your story on Freakonomics.
How did he pronounce it?
Youngling or
okay.
Youngling.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
Wrong. In German, it means young man. And it's a brewery all the way back to 1829, but it's also a family, five generations. So you say it's America's oldest brewery.
This
and
is true.
I thought, wow, that sounds pretty good to me. I'm nostalgic for this kind of story. And you say they've been running it, men, fathers, sons, 180 years, but all of that's about to change because Dick Yingling, the current proprietor, has no...
He has no sons. But the great news is he has four daughters. Now, the fact that he has no sons is really not that relevant to our story because... look, a daughter can obviously run the company. What is relevant, however, is that this is a company that, as you said, has been around more than 150 years. It's not only the oldest American brewery. It is, believe it or not, it's the second largest American-owned brewer. And it's not that large. What that means is that most big American breweries have been bought by foreign operators. In fact, one of the other stories we tell in the hour, which we'll get to, is is the story of one of those buyouts. But the Yingling story is pretty wonderful because This is a company. So this is in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. It's a very nice small town that has seen better days, but it's still doing all right. It used to be a big coal mining town. John O'Hara was born and raised in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Yuengling would not exist as a company were it not a family company. And what I mean by that is it was the fortitude of the family that kept it going through very, very tough times. If there had been shareholders, if there had been an ownership group that included those outside the family, they would have shut it down long ago. They hung around long enough, however, to be successful. And now the current CEO, Dick Yuengling, who, as you said, is the fifth generation CEO, the fifth generation male Yuengling, he's made it work pretty well to the point where they're now thriving. And he's now getting ready to hand off eventually. He's 68 years old. He has no interest in letting go. But eventually he'll hand off to one or two of his daughters.
Now, we're going to, of course, we're getting calls from people who are.
Well, you say beer on the radio.
You say beer and they call on it. And I want people to know we are not having beer in the studio.
I am, actually.
You're, what's in that little cup? All right. Now, there are a couple interesting things about the Yuenglings, even though you feature them as perhaps an example of a family business that works. They have pride. They have institutional knowledge. They have loyalty. But they also had a couple of things that really surprised me. They have no current succession plan?
This is true. No current. In other words,
how common is this?
Well,
Stephen Dubner?
it's wildly common. So, what you won't hear in this hour of radio that we made is we didn't include on tape the family business consultants out there, of whom there are a lot. Because if you think about it, you start a bakery or a brewery or a car maker, a newspaper, some kind of business, and it grows, and you want to hand it off to the next generation. It's complicated for a lot of reasons. Emotional reasons, financial, tax reasons, and so on. So there are a lot of consultants who work with these people. We didn't include them in the hour because honestly, it's not that interesting. It's better for me to tell you what they said. What they said is, it is shocking how often there is no succession plan. If you think that it's hard to talk to your family generally about, you know, when I'm gone, here's what I want to happen. Just see how hard it is when you're talking about the family business with your name on it, because everything is so fraught with emotion and financial and so on implications. So the Yuengling family, you've got Dick, who's 68, still running it, two daughters who are in their 30s who are working there every day now, but there is no succession
plan. That's
amazing. And that's pretty – I wouldn't say it's necessarily typical for a family business because we don't really know, but it's not uncommon.
That's amazing. All right, we're going to take a call. We have Amanda, who is calling from Queens. Amanda, you are on with the Freakonomics radio guy, Stephen Dubner.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your family business story?
Well, my dad built a real estate / construction consulting development corporation.
And you're taking it over?
No, actually, I don't really have intentions on doing that.
And why not?
I think that my dad had other plans, and maybe he doesn't feel like I could fill the job the way, you know, he sees the company going. You know, maybe I don't think I could do as a good job as he could, you know.
Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I agree with him. The company has gone in astronomical, straight up, and I don't think that, I probably wouldn't.
So everybody's a winner, right?
Yeah, well, I certainly the love is around everywhere, and I'm not excluded from anything.
Well, thank you, Amanda, so much for your call. And this actually gets to sort of the heart or the turning point in the first segment of Freakonomics Radio, because the Yuenglings, you ask, may not be typical. You say, are they typical or are they outliers?
Yeah.
And what did you learn?
They are big, fat outliers in terms of the degree of kind of comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, not laughing, although they're funny. They get along well. They share values. You know, you mentioned earlier some of the particulars of what makes a family-run business operate differently, the way they protect and think about the brand. One of the other big ones, though, is you don't have shareholder pressure. You don't have Wall Street. Now, there are even a lot of smaller companies that are public where the shareholder pressure really changes the dynamic. If you don't have that, then you think about your business differently, and you're willing to grow it more slowly and have it return less and so on. The Yuenglings have that, but if you actually pay attention to the data, and that's what we ultimately did. Now, there are a number of economists around the world who study family business. And it's kind of a new area of study, and I'm delighted they do it because it would have taken me years to do the research. These are very bright people at MIT, at Stanford, elsewhere, who have run empirical studies to basically say, look, let's say I can take 1,000 companies and 1,000 family-owned businesses, and let's say I can say 500 of them, when the founder retires or dies, hands off to a non-family CEO, and the other hands off to a family. How do they do? Let's compare them as best as we can, apples and apples. And the short answer is, you lose value. Family
Amazing.
Heirs, on balance, destroy value. Now, I can hear people out there saying, but I know the guy who came in and took over and did better. You may very well. But on average, family-run firms, as you go down the generations, destroy value.
It just amazed me. And people can hear this for themselves. They don't have to listen to me saying it amazed me. They can go to the podcast because it's right there. They can go to – actually, is there an iTunes?
Well,
I'm reading
yeah, there's
here
a, there's,
that you can subscribe to this on iTunes.
You can. There's a Freakonomics podcast on iTunes.
Wow.
And then the hours will be posted, I guess, on
every couple of weeks.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And you can read more, of course, about Freakonomics at Freakonomics.com. Let's take a call from Jose in Brooklyn. His family also has a business. Jose, what's your experience with the family business, or Scientology, as it's been dubbed?
Hi, I just wanted to say that family businesses is good. Not only do you inherit the businesses, but you also inherit the business knowledge.
Yeah, so Jose, I mean, that is really the most impressive argument to my mind for why family businesses work, which is, who possibly is there better to take over and run a family business after the founder is gone than someone who, A, literally, your name is on the firm, so you care because you're defending not just the business but your name, but also the institutional knowledge cannot be taught. Unfortunately, as I said, on average, there are, you know, years ago, there was something called the Carnegie conjecture for Andrew Carnegie, who said that he didn't think that inherited wealth was a good idea at all. Warren Buffett basically makes the same argument. In fact, we've got Warren Buffett's son, Peter Buffett, in our Scientology hour. They make the argument that if you give wealth or a company to the next generation, what you do is you essentially destroy their motivation to work hard. I think a lot of people would say, well, that's a very individual thing. For some people, it would work that way, and for some, it wouldn't. The numbers show that on average, it is true that basically if you care about the firm, what you want to do is find the best qualified CEO. And like, think about it. You built this company. You worked years and years. You slaved and slaved, and it worked. What are the chances that the next best CEO to run it will just happen to be the person that sprang from your own loins, okay?
Yeah.
Probability would tell you probably not.
Right, but if it's 800 times more likely that Derek Jeter's kid will play in the majors
than my kid, let's say,
then why is it not 800 times more likely that my kid, if I'm a great CEO, will be a great CEO?
I'm very glad you asked that question, Jamie.
Yeah, so I kind of borrowed that from
that's
you.
That's all right.
Stephen
no, it's a, well, I'm glad you. I'm glad you liked the question then. All right, here's why. We talk about heritability, and we also have to realize that the geneticists who study this, there are limitations. We're in the early days of figuring out what's really what. But as best we can tell right now, things are heritable. We know that. Hair color, eye color, height, IQ, things like that. It is not a perfectly linear progression because if 7 feet tall people married each other and kept having kids, we'd have 12 feet tall people, and we don't. But there are linear heritability strains like physical things. And then there are others that don't seem to be so heritable.
And this is not one. Okay.
Leadership doesn't seem to be very heritable.
And that gets us to Anheuser-Busch, where each father put 5 drops of beer in the mouth of his son when they were born. But in the case of Anheuser-Busch, the other brewery you feature, Yuengling being the first, Anheuser-Busch the second, it is widely believed by industry insiders that the last Busch son, a well-known ne'er-do-well and playboy, but the last in the long line of Busch men, would not have gotten the job but for his name. Here are Bill Finney, who was director of strategic planning at Anheuser-Busch, and Julie McIntosh, a business journalist and the author of Dethroning the King, The Hostile Takeover of Anheuser-Busch, an American Icon.
No. I don't think August would have become the CEO of the company, but the fact that from day one, from the hour that August was born and his father puts 5 drops of Budweiser in his mouth, when he's 1 hour old, he was indoctrinated into the core values and the culture of Anheuser-Busch.
That's right. The generations of Bush men who would be potential heirs of the company are given 5 little drops of Budweiser beer from a little eyelet dropper into their mouths before they have anything else. So their first drink upon being born is beer, not milk.
So it didn't go so well for the Bushes. Anheuser-Busch was ultimately subsumed by the larger global brewers who had figured out that beer was becoming a global industry, and it kind of proves your point, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it does. Again, I hate to make arguments based on one story, and I'd like to emphasize that what we land on here in the Scienology episode is based on a lot of research on a lot of companies. But yeah, the Anheuser-Busch story is a kind of classic case where the family inheritance model, you know, instead of mother's milk, it's father's beer, literally the first drops. It's an unbelievable story. And August Bush IV, or the fourth as he was called, and his dad, August Bush the third, made the company hugely successful. Now, you could say, look, had the third, who was the, I believe, the fifth generation, not been there, and had it not been his company, his family company, we wouldn't know Budweiser as it is today. It's very hard to, you know, argue these things as counterfactual. But the fact is that the reason that the fourth became CEO a few years back was because he was a Bush. There was no way that this guy on paper would have inherited the job, and it did not turn out well. And some would argue it's because he was not up to the task. Some would argue it's because his father wouldn't get out of the way and let him run the company.
Well, it is wildly informative and entertaining, and sadly, we'll have to leave it there. I have so many other questions for you, but the series is called Freakonomics Radio, and next time, Stephen Dubner, you're going to talk to a roundtable of entertaining and smart economists about what really matters as a parent and what doesn't. And this is all on WNYC. Folks can catch the podcast on WNYC.org. Stephen Dubner, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jamie. Thanks so much.
Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, cooking for Gracie.